This is the beginning of Class 7.
Sashi Bhagi Shushimeta Shan Rira Vinshi Nyende Kempati Sange Shindu Mite Uwagi Jogu
Is there any real value to going during the weekend?
Oh, on top of your regular, it's great. It's fantastic. It's very wonderful.
Yeah, perhaps we can organize something like that after people who want to take their vows take their vows. And yeah. We can go away for a weekend somewhere or something.
Well, Regina was talking about coming to Arizona. I don't know
what
you're
doing.
Right?
Yeah, I asked you about
someday.
That. The last thing you need is a bunch of suits and your hair.
I don't have any hair, so they can't be in there.
No, just more than those.
I would put like them, I would put you in some other town, probably.
Finish that, your mom.
The last thing is, Rinpoche had agreed to teach here April 24th, which is a Sunday, but if His Holiness is teaching at Columbia this thing, I don't know if he is.
Yeah.
Is that the date?
No, it's not that.
It's Thursday and Friday, that's before
oh,
that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Is that a moment thing?
Yeah, Rinpoche can't teach when the Dalai Lama, when his teacher is teaching in that city, he can't teach. That's fine. But I mean, even then, he wouldn't be allowed. He wouldn't want to do it. So, is that sure? The Sinus is Thursday and Friday? Anybody know for sure?
I just know from memory, but I have it at home.
Okay.
I have it written down in the 26th and 27th of the snow line.
So that's the day after.
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay. Well, if it doesn't conflict, he'll feel comfortable doing it.
What will he do?
He'll do the text, the thousand angels text that you're... So that's why I didn't go through it. He's going to go through it. And that's what you base your daily practice on.
Sunday
the 24th of April here. Unless we might take a bigger space. We have some spaces we're looking at.
What time?
He was great. You know, normally he would only teach like an hour in the afternoon. And he said he'll teach all day. He'll do a session at 10, and he'll do a session at 2. And you guys get first an hour in the afternoon. And he said he'll teach all day. He'll do a session at 10, and he'll do a session at 2. And you guys get first. You guys get in first, and then we might have to close in different times.
You said that's what you do for your daily practice.
Yeah, it's the thing. It's a very short thing you recite just before you do your practice. It's at the back of your notebook. It's basically a 7 ingredients practice.
Which, if you're already doing another practice, which incorporates that, then don't
worry
about it.
Yeah, like the 6th session has a minute, but it's not. In the monastery, we always do it anyway, before the sixth session. Good, you can do it. Okay, I think that's... Is that all enough, then?
Yes.
Samnegu means the nine states of meditation.
Number nine.
I thought that was your new arm joint. Nine states of meditation. Meaning, as you go through the five problems and as you apply the, how many antidotes?
Eight
corrections, you move up through nine different levels. So we're covering those nine different levels. What are we on, by the way? We finished, we have five big subjects to study. One was
preparation.
Well, next was
environment,
meaning mental and physical. Then it was
bodily
posture. And now we're on to the mental technique. And we're in the third part of that because we finished the problems and we finished the corrections. And now we tie that into what is it like? What kind of states are you reaching as you go through those problems? Okay, and there are nine different states.
Michael, do you mean to say as you encounter each problem, that's considered a state, or what you achieve after you overcome the problem is considered a state?
You'll see. Okay, I think your question will be answered if I describe it. Okay.
So what is sen and gu?
Sen means mind, ne means state, gu means mind. I'm sorry, sen means mind, right? Ne means state, gu means mind. Ne means state, gu means mind. I'm sorry, sen means mind, right? Ne means state, gu means number nine. This is the first one, and I'll read you what he says. Namale mimitanga tito kitupching. How do you get to this? It's by studying with your teacher what to meditate on. So how do you even get to the first state? It comes by hearing what you should be meditating on. Getting your object from your teacher, or your lama.
The object of meditation?
Yeah. He teaches you some object that you should be meditating on. We're going to meditate on something called Yunden Shigyoma, and that will be the next few classes.
I'm sorry, it goes into your lama and what?
Learning from your lama what to meditate on. We haven't reached that yet. What object to take for your meditation. That's what gets you to the first state. And the first state's name is... it's difficult. Mm-hmm. Putting the mind on the object. Sam Jokpa means putting the mind on the object.
I'm not.
On the object. of meditation. Say you're going to meditate on the image of a Buddha, which is supposed to be the best object to start on. Start with. You hear from your lama says, okay, now go and sit, and I want you to meditate on a Buddha. When you sit down and put your mind on that Buddha, you have reached already the first level. That's like a white belt in karate. You know, if you buy the costume, they give you one.
Michael, you mentioned two different things. You mentioned learning about an object, the proper object of meditation from your lama.
Yeah.
And then
this is the
putting
result.
Your mind on it.
This is the result.
So
what is the force that boots you up to the first level? Just getting the instructions from your lama. This is what you should meditate on. And that boots you up to the first level.
So it's learning about and receiving directions to meditate.
What object to take?
So receiving an object from your lama to meditate on.
Yeah.
Getting
already
instructions about that.
That gets you up to the first. Then you go and sit down and you put your mind on the object. And I'll describe what it's like. He says, Nikola shaksam shaksam me. You're just able to put your mind on the object now and then. You know, you sit there for 15 minutes and, you know, okay, for that long you kept it. Then you're mostly wandering. Then, again, a couple of seconds, you're on the object. Mm-hmm. Like that. That's called putting your mind on the object. He says, at this point, you still don't have the ability to have any continuity in the meditation. There is no stream. It's just single points where you're able to put your mind on the object.
This is this state.
Very obviously first state, lowest state.
So this parallels forgetting instruction.
Well, that would be the... No, well, yeah, you've supposedly overcome laziness by now. At least you sat down, right?
Yeah, because you put your mind on it.
Yeah, he doesn't relate them, but he does relate them to the different chinga and forgetting, and we'll see that. In other words, at the end of the nine, I think we'll be able to split them into the problems. So at this time, at this point, it's characterized by not having the ability to have any continuity. It's just single moments of concentration on the object.
I have a little clarification problem here. Is sin jokpa putting the mind on the object or running from your lama what to put your mind
this
on?
This is the first state, and it is putting your mind on the object in meditation. How do you get to this state? You go to some lama and you say, what should I meditate on? And he says, meditate on a Buddha. So learning what to meditate on is what boots you up to this state. This is the result of your lama telling you what to meditate on.
Your lama telling you and then you sitting to do it,
yeah.
Right? I mean, if he told you and you didn't do it for 2 weeks yet, you still hadn't managed.
Yeah. But what the energy that gets you to this point is knowing what to meditate on.
So if you don't go to a lama,
to get an object of
meditation, you'll never know, or can you pick one yourself?
You can do anything yourself. It's discouraged in Buddhism. It's considered very dangerous.
What, even if it's Buddha? I thought that was the one faithful.
What, that he can choose his own?
Yeah, I mean that if you choose the figure of the Buddha, that's the one safe one.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that in Buddhist practice, it's very much discouraged to do anything without learning about it from a lot in oral tradition. You can't pick up a book. It's many, many, many scriptures say you can't pick up this book and read it thoroughly and understand everything and go practice it more. You need some kind of oral, they call it oral blessing, like that the sound of the words from your teacher and passed on through has some kind of effect. You can't just learn it from a book. So that's Sam Jokpa. Even if the book says the same thing that he said. All right.
What is Sam Jokpa?
Putting the mind on the object. Sem means mind, jopa means putting it on the object. Object is not mentioned. He says something interesting here. He says, by the way, when you reach this point, you'll think that you're worse than you were before. And he says, you will think that your mind is more wild than it was before you started meditating. And you know the answer to that. What is it? You just started to notice it. He makes a point here. He says, don't be discouraged. He says, you're just noticing what was going on all the time. So he says, don't think that it, you're getting worse. You're just starting to notice what your mind is like.
What do you think comes next? Junta Jopa.
Jopa means, again, putting your mind on the object. Juntu means in a stream. In a stream. In some kind of continuity. Yeah, Junta means in a stream. So now for the first time you have more than just instance of focusing. You're able to keep your mind on the object for at least a few seconds in a row. He says, for example, if you were able to keep your mind on the object for the time and not be distracted, for the time it takes you to do one rosary full of Om Mani Padme Hum, that's actually pretty long. But you know, 108 beads, if you go Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 if you can keep your mind on an object for that long, you've reached this state. So this is useful. You get some kind of
keeping your mind on the object, even if the object hasn't got terrific clarity or any of those other things.
Right.
Just keeping your
mind not losing the object.
For a short period of time?
Well, he says if you can keep it as long as it takes to recite Om Mani Padme Hum, one whole rosary full.
4 or 5 minutes, maybe.
That's pretty long, actually.
4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, it is?
Oh,
no, it doesn't take
5 minutes.
4 minutes.
3 or 4 minutes.
If you say it like, you know, it's Om Mani Padme Hum. No, you're supposed to say it slower and more clearly.
Right. That's okay.
Jopa is putting the mind
to set the mind on the object.
So how would
you
call this one?
Oh, I'm afraid you asked me that. Now I have to compete with all these other translations. I didn't think about it. Putting the mind on the object and putting the mind on the object in a stream. Or in a, what do you want to say?
Continuum.
In a continuum?
Instead of the points.
Yeah. Instead of,
there are sparks.
Like that, it's like, this and then, subtract, and then that's just a thing.
Oh, so it's not a continuous stream, it's just making the...
It is continuous for the length of that. What I'm saying is...
So beyond the one point, and a series of connected points.
Yeah, a series of connected points. That's all it is.
But at this stage, you're not concentrating on the object for... This. You gave an example of the rosary as a good example of concentration, but you would not be at this stage, would you?
Well, I mentioned the rosary last week as a different example. Mm-hmm. That was the difference between... having clarity and fixation is holding the rosary, but loosely. And then having fixation and clarity with intensity is where you've got it firmly in your hand. Mm. So that was it was a bad question, which all of you noticed. It said fixation, clarity, and clarity with
intensity.
And it should have said fixation and clarity, comma, and clarity with intensity. So fixation and clarity meant holding the cup or holding the rosary in your hand, but a little bit loosely. Like it could tip over. And then having intensity means you have a firm grip on it. And that was the example. But I didn't say the question very clearly. So he says at this point, remember in the last point he said, you get the impression, he talks about nyam, you get the impression that you're starting to get worse, but actually you're just noticing what was always happening. He says at this point, you get the impression that distractions are resurging. You see, because you're able to keep them away for a while, but then what upsets you is that they come back with such force. You're able to keep your mind on the object for a while, and then you get this rush of distraction. So he says, if you want to know what it feels like when you've reached this state, it feels like that. You keep your mind on the object for maybe a minute, and then you get this impression of resurgence of the thing, of all the thoughts booming back into your mind. So he says that the first one, you get this impression that you're worse than you were before. That's because you're starting to notice it. This one, what you get upset by, or the impression you get as you're practicing, is that they're just coming back with a vengeance because you've kept them down for a while. So you have this impression. It's quiet for a while, so it sounds louder when they come back. That's the sort of impression you get while you're doing this point. He says, at these first two stages, Chingwa and Gopa are many. which is dullness and excitement. Those two diseases are frequent, and the fixation is infrequent. And he says the periods of distraction are longer than what?
Concentration.
The periods of fixation. Okay. The periods on which your mind is off the object are longer than the periods on which your mind is on the object. So the gaps between the times when you're able to keep your mind on the object are longer time-wise than the periods when your mind is on the object. And that's the whole quality of these first two states. The times your mind has wandered are longer than the times your mind is on the object.
What is that intense boredom?
He doesn't mention it.
Serious.
Yeah, he doesn't mention it.
I have never seen it mentioned yet.
You know, boredom is an American... Boredom is a problem that you don't see mentioned in Scripture much, because I don't think agricultural societies or societies up till modern times had enough time to be bored the way we are. You know, we have so much leisure, compared to the people in the past, and we live longer.
No, I mean boredom... When you're concentrating on an object and you've got relative clarity and relative stability and you're bored.
I wouldn't say you have...
what is it? Is it
clarity?
Dullness?
That's probably dullness. Yeah. I would say so.
Okay.
What I say that is a kind of laziness.
Which would be kind of dullness.
Well, do you mean to say that you've mastered it so that you've got this concentration so perfectly that you're tired of looking at that object?
No, just that
It's not stimulating. But I'd say something else. Then I'd say you don't understand the quality of the object. See, if you're thinking about a big raise at work, or you're thinking about a very interesting movie, it's because you see something attractive in the thing. And it's a matter that we're not good enough to realize how sexy it is to look at a Buddha for a long time. You know, how stimulating and exciting it would be to see one for a long time. And if you have that feeling, I would say, try to change the object to someone that you really have intense faith in. You know, if you don't get off on focusing on a Buddha, frankly, I don't. I always use my Lama or Dalai Lama or something like that, and then I get some kind of emotion about it that keeps me interested. So I understand that. It's hard to relate to the Buddha's image. It's a very holy image, and he really does look like that. When you see him, you will know that, and then you'll think that's the nicest one. But it's just foreign to us. That's why they say that the Buddha appears as the Dalai Lama in this world, because you're more attracted to him right now in our present condition. Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that if you truly understood the benefits of concentrating on an object like that, then it couldn't be boring. I mean, how could you really, truly grasp the benefits of it and be bored at the same time?
I guess not, but the fact is that we do, right? And it's probably because we don't grasp the benefits. So I'd say, that's why I said I thought you might want to call that state laziness, really. You know? Because its antidote would be seeing the good qualities of that Buddha. You see what I mean?
Well, lazy, you know,
it is a kind of
talks about laziness as a form of being attracted to in the context of meditation or dharma, undesirable, being attracted to unvirtue. It's stated that way in some of the texts.
I haven't seen it.
Laziness.
But I think Toa.
It's kind of interesting because in a way that makes
sense. No, laziness is kind of not wanting to do it. Because those four antidotes are pretty clear.
But I think this is taken one step further and saying, why isn't it that you want to do it? It's because you're thinking about you want to have pancakes for breakfast, or you would like to rather think about something different, or you'd rather do something different.
I guess you could say that.
We don't understand. You think that the benefits of having pancakes are better than the benefits of concentrating?
Yeah, actually we do. I do. And the jokpa. Jopang means what?
Putting your mind.
Put your mind on the object. Lende means, you've seen it in the books, patch like. This is a lemba. This is a patch. To patch something. Patch. Like a patch on a tire. More like that.
Putting the mind on a patch.
He says, when you get a hole in your clothes, you put a patch on it.
Patching the
And the thing you're patching is what?
The clothes.
The clothes, really. The thing that needs patching is the clothes.
Clothes?
The cloth. The shirt. Okay. He's trying to make a parallel. This is called patch-like fixation. Patch-like, putting your mind on the object. Because, what is the thing being patched? He says it's the continuity. And I've always had, you know, until I studied it better, I always had it wrong. So what you're patching is, you've got some continuity, and then it breaks, and then you got more continuity. So what, in effect, what you're doing is, at this point, your mind wanders, and you catch yourself. And by picking it up again, in a sense, you're putting a patch on that hole. That's the way he explained it. I used to think it meant patch-like in the sense that it went on for a while and then you had a patch and you're like, not like that. There's a gap. What do you call it?
You connect
an interruption. And by catching yourself and starting again, in a sense, you're patching up that hole.
So your overall translation would be?
Patch-like, putting your mind on the object. Or, you know, that won't make it in a book, but.
Patch continuity.
Well, this word means putting your mind on the object. I didn't want to use fixation because we used it for that other thing. And this means patch. In patches? Patching?
Patching continuity?
So this is somewhat like the correction of taking an action.
Well, here's what he says. The distinction that sets this apart from the two before is the length of the wandering of the mind. See, as you see here, it's really just gaps that you're filling in.
You're patching the stream, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, so the gaps here, remember the gaps here were, this was like this. I guess we should draw it, right?
Yeah, you get the dots. Stretching the dots into this section.
And this is more like.
Oh, I like this.
Visuals.
This means E.
Does that just mean a longer stream?
Well, he's saying, he's not defining it, he's not comparing it to the other two by a longer stream, he's defining it by a shorter gap.
Can you just repeat what you just said about what makes it different from?
He says, what distinguishes it is that the length of the wandering, the length of this gap here, is shorter.
Wait a minute.
This is number three. This is periods of good meditation. These are periods of distraction.
Your listener is distracted.
Yeah, you're less the length of the distracted period, the length of the gap is longer. It's shorter. Sorry.
The length of the gap that you are patching is
shorter.
Plus you're patching.
Plus you're patching, I don't know, yeah, you can say that. But I'd say when you're patching means to start up again. You can't go back in time and fill up that hole. Patching means you start it again.
Are you doing that?
But it's so long. You don't patch, a shoelace.
You don't put a band-aid on.
He says at this point, you have gained a pretty powerful jemba, recollection. Remembering to come back to your object. Recall. You can guess what's going to happen next.
Is that first letter a la under the time?
This one? La.
How do you spell jumbo?
Jumbo, I'll spell for you. Oh, you mean... This is memory, which has to, you don't have to write that down. It's, you got it already. But it's this is the point at which memory is getting quite strong. Remembering to go back to your object is getting quite strong.
So, Michael, at that level number three, are you saying that the gaps, the breaks in concentration are shorter?
Yeah. Then in the first two cases.
No, then the concentration.
Yeah. He's probably going to say that. He hasn't said it yet.
For level
he's
three.
He's going to say that, yeah. Mm-hmm. He hasn't got to that yet. And I'll tell you why after the next one. Okay, number four. Now, what you want to, I didn't think much about how to translate them, but you can talk about this kind of thing all day and not decide. You know. These are Sanskrit translations. Nyewar means closely. The mind is close on the object. Okay. It's a Sanskrit prefix that doesn't mean closely very often. Okay? That people try to call closely and it doesn't work all the time. Close recollection, for example. Doesn't have anything to do with it. At least in English. So in Nyewar Jopa, he says, at this point, your recollection has gotten extremely strong. So, and as a result of that, it is impossible from this point on to lose the object completely.
You mean completely?
You will never just lose the object.
You
can wander around it, can wander away from it temporarily, come back to it.
So you'll lose clarity, you'll lose intensity, but
you lose clarity and you lose fixation up to this point.
At that point, you don't lose fixation.
You can't. Yeah. You will never lose the object. Yeah.
How did you translate keeping closely on the object? Closely on the object.
Staying closely on the object. Putting your mind closely on the object. That's the. But you know what it is now.
What is it again?
It's where you because of what.
Recollection.
Because recollection has reached a very strong point, stronger than the last point, it's impossible from this point on for you to have a gap where you lose the object completely. Mm. He says, and therefore it's really distinguishes itself from the other three. This is a big difference from the other three. Why?
No gaps.
The line is different, right? The line looks quite different. So he says, but two other things are going on quite heavily here. What are they?
Dullness.
Agitation. Obvious dullness and obvious agitation. Whatever you want to call it, okay?
Why is that?
You haven't got yet to the... You just reached the third problem, actually. Okay. What were we up to? Up to now, we're still using recollection, which was the antidote to which problem?
Remembering.
Losing the object.
Not losing the object, okay? Mm-hmm. So the first four mental states are all contained in the second... The second problem is going on. You're losing the object completely. Maybe for shorter periods or longer periods, but you're losing the object completely. When you get to the fourth one, you're no longer losing the object completely, but now you've reached the third problem, which is dullness or agitation with the object still sitting there in front of your mind. So now you're no longer struggling to keep the object in your mind, you're struggling to keep the quality of your meditation up.
Is it strong dullness and strong agitation, or just...
Obvious, he says. Heavy. Right? Obvious dullness and obvious agitation are going on at the fourth point. But what's brought you to the fourth point is very strong recall. Your ability to recall the object, bring it back into your mind, has now reached a very fine point. And he says... The Lama, remember these are lectures being given in 1921. The Lama mentioned that at this point your ability to recall the object is like a grown-up person. It's not an adult. It's what do you call it in English? Grown up.
Mature.
It's full grown. It's full grown. Your ability to recall the object now is full grown.
It's complete grown up. You can see it.
Yeah. Mature. He says, by the way, he uses both words as a, what do you call it? John, the president, is going today to a positive. Okay. Anyway. It's where you put two words next to each other and they mean the same thing. You know? Jemba, recalling the object, is, and he uses that, he uses Gopa complete, and he uses adult next to it. And it's a word that only means an adult person. It doesn't ever mean anything else. So he does mean full-blown and full-grown. Okay? Number five. Tulua is a very important word in the Sanskrit is dham, dhammaya, and it means to tame something. Oh, you went to the bathroom?
No, she tried to.
Downstairs, the active bathroom is downstairs. So Dulwa means to tame something or to bring something under control. It's in Sanskrit it's dham, and the negative is adam, and so the word for a diamond, which is cannot be overcome by anything. The diamond is the hardest thing in the universe, so it can't be scratched by any object in the universe. So it's adamas, and that came into Greek as adamas. And the word adamantine comes from that. And by the time it reached English, the A had gotten lost and it became diamond. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, so Dulwa Chepa means to bring it under control. Chepa means to do it. The word Vinaya is also comes from this root. The monk styles are called really how to control yourself. Dulwa Chepa. He says, at the fourth stage, the tendency is for people to bring their mind inside too forcefully. At the fourth stage. The tendency is for people to bring their mind in inside too forcefully. And therefore, subtle dullness becomes a great danger.
You need to bring your mind in.
Your guess is as good as mine. I was afraid you'd ask me that. You guys really do this. It says, Sem Nung De Juta. Your withdrawing of the mind into yourself is too strong. Too introspective? Too focused inwards? Too focused inside with too much, with excessive strength, so that you get subtle dullness. Trying
subtle
dullness.
Am I trying too hard?
I think it's maybe something we have to find out. I would say normally that these words in Tibetan mean they can also describe what happens during sleep as you go to sleep. The mind is brought into the inside. Okay. So it's too excessive. It's like going in. It's like bringing it in so far that it gets dumb. It gets dull. Bringing the mind in away from the sense objects so with such strength that you lose your strength. You become dull.
Wouldn't sleep be a good analogy? Heading toward unconsciousness?
I think so, yeah. Something like that. Sleep. These same words are used for what happens to your mind during sleep. So I'm just saying, maybe he's trying to say that. In fact, at higher levels of concentration, the act of sleeping becomes the act of meditation. Mm. And your sleep turns into concentration. And that's one of the benefits of shamatha.
Couldn't this be like hypnosis?
I don't think so. Or maybe in that you can become kind of dull. Yeah, I imagine. I've never been hypnotized.
What's jipa?
Which one?
Jipa.
Jipa means to do it. To control the mind. To bring it under control.
And then duwa means to tame.
Yeah, so to do the taming. In Tibetan, sometimes you have to have a verbalizer. In English, you say, you don't say controlling sometimes, you say bring it under control. It's like that. It's the bring and bring it under control. He says, at this point, you need powerful... Will you tell me? What problem have we reached?
Watchfulness?
Yeah, you need watchfulness. You need sheshin. Sheshin. Then now we're definitely on to the third problem, right? Chingu have occurred. Dullness or agitation has occurred. And what you need at this point is powerful watchfulness.
So what is this level called?
Bringing it under control. Bringing the mind under control. You can assume the word mind in all of these things. He doesn't repeat it, but it's always there. He says, watchfulness is the spy that you send out ahead of you. And then when you catch yourself, uplift your mind. So he's got now those two points in one point, doesn't he? He's saying, catch yourself, and then bring your mind up somehow.
Don't you need watchfulness in all these previous levels?
You really do.
So what?
Yeah, if you were in a debate ground, you know, they'd say, is watchfulness the third, the antidote to the third problem? And if you're a smart debater, you'd say no. And then they'll try to attack you and say, what do you mean watchfulness is number three? And you say, oh, you mean number three in DA? Of course it is. Mm-hmm. So then in Tibetan you have to say, watchfulness, which is number three of the eighth, is the antidote for number three. I'm sorry, number five of the eighth. Mm-hmm. You see, you have to use that qualifier. There's lots of watchfulnesses.
So how is this really distinct than the other steps, since all the other steps
he's differentiating. I think it's... Don't forget you're on the object.
No.
So it's not the act of recalling the object. It's bringing your mind back to the object. Catching your mind wandering from the object.
Prior, it was catching your mind wandering from the object. Now it's catching your mind not being clear, not having sense.
Catching your mind on the object, but some problem of the quality of your meditation. The other one was just catching yourself not being on the object at all, bringing your mind back.
So maybe you have to be more aware because it's a subtler catch. You know, it's not as easy to catch because it's a subtler type of problem.
Yeah.
These are all the corrections are functioning all along anyway. I mean, to be aware enough to start to apply the patch means that you're...
That's true.
You're making the correction, right?
Because he does say here... Your watchfulness reaches a mature level, a strong level.
And then you're taking action to apply the
patch. Implying that it was there before. That some kind of watchfulness was there before. We have this thing in the perfections, and we debate Madhyamika. There are six perfections. The Madhyamika Avatara has 10 chapters relating to the 10 perfections. And, you know, you debate, oh, he didn't have morality before that. How did he ever get to that perfection? You say, yeah, he had it, but this is the stage at which it turns on. You know, so you can say that. That's all right. So he says that, and then he says, the difference between this and the previous two, okay?
Previous two meaning three and four?
Yeah. Is whether or not the dullness and agitation are obvious. You tell me.
You mean coarse? Obvious as in coarse?
Yeah, gross. I like gross because it's like hippie wearing gross. Obvious. What differentiates five from the last two is that is a distinction of what did you have here, by the way? What was the state of your dullness here?
Obvious.
If he's saying now the difference between this one and this one. Let's say your dullness is like, you know, here your dullness is like, you know, it's tricky. It looks like meditation. Okay. So he's implying that if you drew it, what would the difference be between this one and this one? That here the dullness is not gross. He doesn't say it's subtle, but he says there's a difference in whether the dullness is obvious or not.
When you say watchfulness is completely mature at this point, you mean...
He doesn't say mature in this case, he says powerful.
Oh.
So it's not like you always catch it every time. Meet
it doesn't seem to imply that, no. It just says powerful. We'll do one more and then we'll take a break.
What is the difference? I still
He said, what's the difference between 5 and really 4 and 3? He says, it's in the degree in which the dullness or the wandering is obvious or is gross, which implies that it's fairly subtle by this time.
So are you comparing, did you do the straight line to show the difference between 4 and 5?
No. Nope.
Or is it because you have both?
Both of them were straight lines because there were no gaps. There are no gaps. You did not lose the object. Right? You don't lose the object anymore. So that just represents whether or not there are gaps.
Okay.
And this other little line represents whether or not you have obvious dullness or obvious agitation.
Oh.
And in this case, it's just gross. It's obvious. And in this case, it's getting more tricky.
And subtle means
can
you don't
call
have
it subtle?
He doesn't say that. I hesitate to say it. He says, in the other two cases, you have a difference in the obviousness.
Moving in
which seems to imply that it's subtle by now, but he doesn't say that.
So in the subtle, you're only lacking intensity.
Right.
And you don't have clarity.
No, I'm sorry. You have clarity and intensity. I'm sorry, clarity and fixation, but right, no intensity.
Michael, wouldn't the obvious effect have to do with the quality of your watchfulness more than the quality of the dullness or agitation?
You could say that.
Well, it seems to be able to get to the level where the dullness is only subtle, you need to have developed your watchfulness quite well.
Yeah, or maybe you could say that.
You'd be catching the obvious one.
Maybe you could say that if watchfulness stayed constant, the first one would be obvious to it, and the second one would be not so obvious to it. What you want to say is that agitation and dullness are the same, and agitation gets better or not.
But too much watchfulness is a distraction.
Yeah, we said that. Yeah. It becomes a distraction to keep checking. So you check from time to time. Let's do one more. What was the solution for Chingwa? What was the solution for dullness? This is dullness, right? You had obvious dullness here. And
tightening up.
Yeah. And what was the, if it got worse, what were you supposed to do? Yeah, brighten up your life. Uplift yourself. Like how? Think of something good. You know, hey, I'm lucky to be alive. I'm one of the million. I'm one out of a million people even trying to do this meditation. You know, the rest of the people are going like sheep to the slaughter. If the book says it, all the scriptures say it. You know, the mass of humanity is lemmings jumping off a cliff. You know, at least I got the brains to be trying, you know. At least I have the good luck, the good fortune.
The other way.
To be here.
Walking the time.
You know? I mean, it's hard, but at least I'm on the right track. I'm in the right ballpark. Okay. I'm proud of myself, happy. He says, what happens with the six? What do you guess happens with the six? Here you brought your mind up. You tried to use something to bring your mind up.
Way up now.
Yeah, you went up too high. Okay? It says that you overdo it. And that's like a pendulum. You know, like good meditation is a pendulum. And driving too, you know, if you go too far, if you correct too far to the left, then you gotta do a big right. Okay? So he says, at this point, the uplifting of your mind at number 5 got too far, went too far, and you got agitation.
I thought number 5 was to tame it.
Don't be distracted by the words of the names, and you'll learn that in Buddhism. Okay, it means to bring it under control. But what does that mean? Just to bring your obvious dullness under control.
So this only
applies
to dullness and not to agitation.
He's tending that way, but you'll see. One of them is going to drop out. Another one will come back. Okay.
So that's a good point. I mean, is it number 4 is. Apparently, dullness is what you encounter as a problem first.
He said at number 4 you have both. He said you have both.
And then also number 5?
What he's saying here, he calls this gupa trumal. What does trumal mean?
Subtle.
So he's just... Now you've got a subtle... What? A agitation, which we didn't talk about before. Tim came in early, and we were looking in the computer to find... You know, I said, I haven't seen this word before, subtle agitation. And we checked the computer. It's not there. This is the only description of it. That's interesting. It's kind of nice. You get the subtle agitation by taking too much action to cut off...
Subtle. That's the only place it ever comes from?
It's the only place we could find it.
What
is she? And then I can search 30,000 pages in it in like 30 seconds now. That's very useful. I don't think you'll find it anywhere. So this
five.
Is where you get subtle agitation.
So number five is only dullness.
Yeah, I guess let's put agitation above. How's that? Here you've got more. You're the guinea pig. You're the first class I do this with.
Well, it's good.
So does she want me?
Oh, I'm sorry. Good point. Shiva means peace. P-E-A. Chepa means to make. Make it peaceful. Make it calm. Make the mind calm.
And so what would you call it?
Making the mind calm. Calming the mind. But you see, it doesn't... It has a specific technical meaning. You see, it doesn't just mean, hey, you know, you're calm after that. They're looking for words to describe states that have no words. When they get in the Abhidharma in the third chapter, when they try to describe subatomic particles, which they describe down to about 20, you know, and it's interesting because modern physicists have had the same problem. They call them bolts. What do they call them?
Quarks.
They just make up silly words because there's no word to describe that.
Some of them are for fitting as weight.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, what is it? It's not really becoming calm. You've been calm all along. But it's called calming them.
Does this include the opposite?
We're going to talk about that. He says at this point you need extremely powerful what? Washing. Shishin. The antidote here is still powerful shishin. It was for the last one, too.
But what's the difference?
You tell me. The antidotes were the same.
Watchfulness?
Powerful watchfulness. The problem here is subtle
agitation.
The problem here was subtle
dullness.
Okay.
So when you want to bring...
So what do you think distinguishes this level from that one? You can no longer have much trouble of subtle dullness. And that's how he describes it. And by the time you get to number six, there's not a big danger. What does that imply? There's something of getting subtle dullness.
So how does this relate to your pendulum?
I guess it's not going to swing back very likely. Mm-hmm. Pendulum's going like this. It started out like that, you know, and now it's like...
But I would think every time you have subtle dullness, you overcorrect to subtle agitation. Right? I mean, that would be my...
Anytime you try to correct subtle dullness?
In step five, you get subtle dullness once.
Yeah.
You correct it.
Oh,
once.
I think so, yeah. I don't think you do this one night on March 10th and then on March 12th you still have
to. So you're still going back and forth between subtle dullness.
By the way, he says, what do you think kicks you up to five and six? What do you think is it that allows you to get to number five and six? No, but which one of the antidotes is very active?
Watchfulness.
So he says watchfulness is the thing that allows you to move up to five and six. And at this point, he says, you can call your watchfulness... There you go, Mr. Stilwell.
Taking action.
Complete. Okay. At this point, you can call your watchfulness complete.
You mean at the sixth?
Full grown, full blown. At six. Okay, take a break.
Can you just go over...
Did you want to heat up the tea?
Yeah, I don't have...
Fran,
can you do that? Yeah, there's a lighter, right? Yeah, but I...
You got
on the right, there's a little by the sink. On the left side, there's a lighter.
You have to turn on the gas and then stick the flame in there, and it doesn't work right.
You can burn your hairs on your hand.
Oh,
Well, that's if you're really quick. Then your eyebrows are in trouble, I think.
No, I stayed out of work today. No, I went on the march today.
How'd it go?
It was wet. It was great. I mean, you know.
Only the diehards stay, right?
They forgot to go there because there were a lot of Tibetans from New York.
How many?
So not too many, not so many lessons.
Nambar means totally Shiva Chepa. Shiva Chepa means, that was the name of the last one, right? So to become totally calm, make the mind totally calm. He says, I'll just read it to you. He says, at the seventh level, because your recollection and watchfulness have become totally complete, because they are full grown, it's difficult for dullness and agitation to occur. But you still have to use effort towards eliminating subtle dullness and subtle agitation completely. And what I mean is basically, at this point it's difficult for plain old dullness and agitation to occur, but you still got to, at this point you're still trying to make some active effort to eliminate them completely. He says, what distinguishes this one, or I should say no, from the ones before it, are that whether or not you have to, the word in Tibetan is a little tricky, whether or not you have to have much fear that subtle forms of dullness are going to occur or not. Whether or not you have to watch very, very carefully anymore. Yendo cher means whether or not you have to worry about it very much. How's that?
You're going to get
subtle dullness or agitation.
You don't have to.
You don't. He's implying that. You still have to be concerned whether they're going to occur or not, but you don't have to be very concerned about it. It's like they could happen, but it's not like you have to go crazy watching out for them. At this point, you're actually trying to clean up the last survivors of Chinggu. Mop up after it? He says, even though there's no great danger of the subtle forms of dullness and agitation occurring at this point, it's still necessary for you to make some efforts to wipe them out completely.
Would you want to do a drawing of this number 7?
I wouldn't take a shot. Yeah, I guess we can do it like this, maybe.
A continuum, a circle.
You know, they're getting wimpy now. They're getting wimpy. You're getting strong.
Or maybe that they're further apart now when they do.
Yeah, that. Like that. They're spotty now. And he says it's no longer that you're attacking them, that they're attacking you. You're attacking them. It's just like that. They're like the last remnants of the German army or something. Now you're going after them.
The definition is to be totally calm, but it also refers
Don't much think about the names. The names are not descriptive of the state, as I said before.
So it pertains to both dullness and agitation.
You do, yeah, he mentions that. It is subtle dullness and subtle agitation. And you're just going in and wiping out the last survivors, but you have to make some effort to do that. What does that imply the next one's going to be?
No more.
Something like that. Let's see. I don't know. He has a note here. He says, from the third stage through the seventh stage, meaning 5 stages, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. For the most part, you are in meditation, but you are being interrupted by dullness and agitation. So there, for the most part, your meditation is pretty good, but you are still being bothered by dullness and agitation in those 5 stages. Meaning 3 through 7. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
1 and 2, you're not meditating at all.
Yeah, the implication is that 1 and 2, the wandering was more than the meditation. Now you've got pretty good meditation, but it's being interrupted by dullness and agitation.
The difference between Shiva and dullness.
Again, don't get hung up on the names. One means control. One means to put them to rest, to make your mind calm. Shiva means peace. P-E-A-C-E. It's related to the word Shiva, which means to desire. And sometimes Shiva Chepa means to stop something, to put it to rest. Okay, number 8. Brief descriptions of all nine. And the names.
Are you told us disregard the name?
Yeah, you can put that. We'll see what happens.
As long as we spell that right, it's okay.
Okay, he says, what does Tsechik mean? Tsechik is the definition of Tingen Zen Samadhi. What is that? Tsechik? Tsechik is a...
concentration.
Single-pointed mind. One-pointedness. Single-mindedness. I like the word single-mindedness. It's really what it is. So Tsechik means one point. Tsechikta means one-pointedly. Chepa means bring the mind to one-pointedness. Reaching one-pointedness. How's that? He says at this point, at the beginning of your meditation, as your meditation period starts, you make a slight effort to bring your mind to the object. Okay. And then during the whole meditation session, what? There's no shingwa or kappa. You don't get dullness or agitation. But you have to apply some effort before you start. Before you start, you have to check your mind, clear your mind, balance it, and then it just cruises for the whole meditation. He says, for example, you can compare these last few stages, he doesn't say which ones, to having an enemy who is very powerful, then on to having an enemy who has gotten weaker, on to having an enemy who is totally, what do you call it?
The enemy.
Impotent. Defanged is good, yeah. He says, in other words, the enemy starts out very serious enemy. He's got some guns. And then later on, you've taken most of his guns away, and at the end, he's just standing there, defenseless.
So would you say it's effortless after you place it on the object?
Well, that's going to come later, because he said you need... Yeah, after the effort. You need some effort to kick off.
So after the initial effort, no effort.
Yeah. So you can imagine what the ninth one is going to be, right? Wow. By the way, he says, from the eighth level on up, you don't need to turn on your shesha anymore. You don't need to use actively watchfulness anymore.
What's the difference?
Chepa means to do it, and jopa means to set the mind on the object. But again, you really should know the characteristics of each level and not be too concerned about the names. I can imagine someone getting a list of the names, you know, and struggling to reach peace, you know, and then trying after that to be calm, and then trying after that to be, you know.
Totally calm.
Those are frustrating when you just see a list like that. By the way, if you try to read a sutra, that's all you get. And that's why we don't read sutras. I mean, in monasteries, they don't read the sutras. All of these things are found in the sutras. But to get this list of nine, you'll have to read 100 sutras, and there'll be this here, this, that, this here, and that, that. The Buddha doesn't give definitions and distinctions and divisions, and he just says, well, put your mind to these nine steps. And you have no idea what they refer to. You have to dig through the whole sutras. And that was what the great early commentators did. You know, the Abhidharma, for example, is basically a big organization of the sutras. So, you know, you can go try to read sutras if you want, but you'll get a list of nine things and there'll be no description of what they are.
So is there a value in reading sutras?
I it's great. It's the word of the Buddha. We memorize. And then later on you've taken most of his guns away, and at the end he's just standing there, defenseless.
So would you say it's effortless after you place it on the object?
Well, that's going to come later because he said you need... Yeah, after.
After the effort.
You need some effort to kick off.
So after the initial effort, no effort.
Yeah. So you can imagine what the ninth one is going to be, right?
No effort.
By the way, he says from the eighth level on up, you don't need to turn on your station anymore. You don't need to use actively watchfulness anymore.
What's the difference?
Jiva means to do it, and Jopa means to set the mind on the object. But again, I don't, I mean, you really should know the characteristics of each level and not be too concerned about the names. I can imagine someone getting a list of the names, you know, and struggling to reach peace, you know, and then trying after that to be calm, and then trying after that to be, you know.
Totally calm.
Those are frustrating when you just see a list like that. By the way, if you try to read a sutra, that's all you get. And that's why we don't read sutras. I mean, in monastery, they don't read the sutras. All of these things are found in the sutras. But to get this list of nine, you'll have to read 100 sutras, and there'll be this here, this, that, this here, and that, that. The Buddha doesn't give definitions and distinctions and divisions, and he just says, well, put your mind to these nine steps. And you have no idea what they refer to. You have to dig through the whole sutras. And that was what the great early commentators did. You know, they the Abhidharma, for example, is basically a big organization of the sutras. So, you know, you can go try to read sutras if you want, but you'll get a list of nine things and there'll be no description of what they are.
So is there a value in reading sutras?
I it's great. It's the word of the Buddha. We memorize a lot of sutras in the monastery just for the to have them in your mind. It affects your mind. But for study, much better to work with the Tibetan monastic textbooks. Because even these nine will be mentioned in a verse in the Dengyur, which is the Indian commentary, without any explanation of what they are. Or, you know, like those five conditions that for the place, they were Loden Kandu Drupe Yu, Lepa Nyedam, Lepa Nyebas, Nesangwa, Lepa Nyedam, Nesangwa, Sasang, Sasangwa, Dosangwa, and what was the last one? It doesn't give any clue to what it is. Lepa Nyepa means easy to find. Wadi doesn't say. Nesangwa means good place. Sasangwa means good area. Doksangwa means good friends. And everything you need. Now, what do those mean, actually?
Sounds like great partners.
That's good.
Actually, easy to find means comfortable place, you have food and clothing. That one's not too bad. Good place means no wild animals or other fearful things that endanger you. Safe place. Good place means safe place. Good area means healthy place. Doesn't make you sick. Good friends means people who share your Buddhist morality and your Buddhist view of emptiness and everything. And then having all the things you need means not too many crowds during the day and not too many noises at night. So, I mean, you know, you can go study the Tengger if you want, but it's much better to work from monastic textbooks. Then you can go back and you know what they mean. Thanks, Pat. Yeah.
Is this because when the Buddha taught these things, everybody knew things were?
Yeah, they are code words that were taught to students, and then the Lama would reveal the oral tradition to him. You see? They teach you the code. Abhidharma goes, Nabu Nam Nidushila, Wanjushila, Nila, Nangana Gepodina, Nikurinon Jim Namjala, Nana Gepodina, Nana Gepodina, the five and the eight connect to the three and the four. Okay, good luck.
Are we talking about a situation where the Buddha said, okay, you can only write down the code part of it, and I'm going to give you orally and drop your pens the explanation part, so you need therefore...
The early commentators restricted it to code because then you could memorize it easily.
So the Buddha actually explained all that, but they couldn't write the whole thing out, so they...
And when the tradition of passing, some of it was hidden also. Some of it was meant to be hidden.
It's like shorthand?
And it's also like, it's to memorize. If you wrote it all out, instead of memorizing 50 pages for the Abhisamangkara, you'd have to, the full commentary is about 1,000 pages. Couldn't memorize it.
so that you depend then on the sutras and somebody who knows how to decode them, because the code book really wasn't written. Or
someone who had received the authorization. And for both purposes, for security and as later on they start to write things out more. So it's helpful. Okay, so Nyambarjopa. Nyambarjopa is the verb for Nyamshak. What's Nyamshak? You had it. Nyamshak is like that deep meditation, deep state of meditation. So you can say deep state of meditation. Some people struggle to translate the Nyam. Nyamba means even. Remember in the posture, your shoulders were Nyamba. When we discuss the posture meditation. So Nyamba does mean even. People struggle to give it some meaning. I don't know if there's a meaning. It just means deep meditation. Okay. You can say even meditation if you want. Okay. What are the qualities of this? You tell me.
So you would say you place mind in deep meditation?
You can say equilibrium, stability or something. You know, people struggle to get some meaning in there, but it's artificial. You don't have to struggle. It's not what it means. When you learn Tibetan very well, you realize that there are Sanskrit prefixes and suffixes. You know, when I say consciousness in English, and you're a Tibetan translator who doesn't know English very well, you'll say coming together knowingness, knowing now, a noun of coming together knowing. And most of the translations are like that. They just don't know that consciousness is a single word meaning awareness. So a lot of times you get a very bad translation because they don't know that that whole unit is one word and it doesn't have to be. You don't have to struggle to give each syllable a meaning. It's not meant that way. Even in English, all the Latin prefixes and suffixes they don't have their separate meanings anymore. Consciousness doesn't mean a together knowingness anymore. It just means to be aware. So you have to learn it well. Nyambarjopa is what? You tell me.
The mind is always in deep meditation.
Yeah, come on.
Easy to get there, not having to defend it.
Define it by the last one.
Effortless.
Effortless entering into deep meditation. Wow.
Entering the body.
Yeah. And he says the ninth one is accomplished through Dibha. Dibha means doing it over and over and over and over.
Doing what? The prior steps.
Practicing your morning meditation. Or an evening. Sunday.
How common is it for somebody to be able to do this?
They say that if you you try hard, you can do it in 6 months.
Can you do it?
Mm.
Huh? Can you do it?
An hour a day.
We're not allowed to say.
God, this can be.
If you had, if you never had, you couldn't see emptiness directly.
If you what?
If you had never done it, you could never see emptiness directly.
So you have to have it.
If you saw it,
No,
not at all. This comes way before. He doesn't say anything. What he does say is that this sets the stage. What is jhetan? Jhetan means this is very, very. I don't know how to say it. Jhetan means fertile. This sets a fertile field for the growth of shamanism.
What?
This
ninth
one. So which is almost to say it is shamanism. You see, he doesn't clearly say it is or isn't. He just says this is totally consistent with the state of shamanism in the desire realm.
What's the definition of shamanism again?
I didn't give you one. And I'll pass on it. I'll give you a good one next week. It's something like the mind focus in having reached the highest state. You know, there's three qualities of it. But what I've told you, how I've described it to you, is its most important function. You can achieve shamatha without perceiving emptiness. But the most important function of shamatha is a perfect meditation, which is focused on emptiness. And shamatha and vipassana always come
they don't always come together, but when you, that the pair of those is the goal of meditation. Does shamatha investigate the nature of the object? No. But so it must be joined with vipassana, which is the wisdom which investigates the object. So it's almost like you've got the vice and the screwdriver or something. Shamatha is holding the object so that vipassana, which is the highest state of wisdom, can analyze it. So there are teachings on. I can take you through 8 steps of objects. We did them in our debating the other day. But the basic distinction, I didn't want to bring it up, but since you brought it up, the distinction between shamatha and vipassana, which are very famous words and misused a lot, they are both focused on the nature of objects and on all objects. They both have clarity and fixation and clarity with intensity. Okay? So the nature of how they concentrate is the same. And the objects towards which they focus is the same. So what distinguishes them?
The object?
No, the objects are the same. So what do you think distinguishes them? This is a point which is missed by a lot of people.
The intensity?
No, the intensity is totally the same.
Can you say that again, please?
The difference between these very famous two words, which are thrown around very lightly, shamatha and vipassana.
Can you spell that second word?
I was afraid you asked me that.
Is it the same as vipassana meditation?
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
I want to look it up for you. Let me look it up, okay? Because I don't want to misspell it. Vipassana is the Pali. In a sense, what I believe is the vipassana.
That's what people do when they go and do this breath meditation for 10 minutes.
Yeah, but...
That's point 9 is vipassana.
No, we're just comparing... Somebody asked how to compare point 9 to these two very high states of wisdom and meditation. Which are very famous. I mean, if you read the Dhamma books and all that stuff, they mention them all the time. And rarely very clearly. Shamatha is focused towards the totality of objects and their nature. Vipassana is focused towards the totality of objects and their nature. Shamatha, the totality of objects and their nature, what we call jitta and jinyepa. You weren't supposed to get into this. Okay, you want to? They're both focused on the real nature of existence at their highest level. They both have perfect fixation. They both have perfect clarity. They both have clarity with
intent.
So what makes them different?
One is ultimate reality.
No, both ultimate reality.
About conventional?
Both conventional.
I would guess that from shamatha you could perceive emptiness directly, and from vipassana you could not.
No, vipassana is the
Did you say before shamatha holds the object, the vipassana can analyze the object?
Well, that's the difference. Okay, vipassana is examining the nature of the object. Vipassana is analyzing, and shamatha is not. Shamatha is just grasping the object, it's keeping you on the object. So this is the point of meditation. The point of meditation is, we didn't talk about content yet. It's just a microscope. It's just a tool to keep the mind on the object fiercely. Then you have to have another part of another mental function, which is wisdom, which understands the nature of this object, which is analyzing the nature of the object and coming up with the ultimate nature of the object. So they're different.
Taking your body to work and your mind
does work. That's the difference between the two. And then there's a long. There's 8 different stages you have to discuss. You don't have time to learn. Well, they're called chepa, mi chepa, mobota, and then fourth one is. These are kaveyu. And then you have kebe, chepa namjang, kebe mipa, and. So you can study it.
Yeah. Are you going to talk about the changes that occur in the bodies and feelings and sensations and all that associated with this?
He doesn't talk much about it. Your body, those are sense sensations. Those are gross distraction.
Well, purification of the negative energies. And things.
The first Dalai Lama mentioned in his commentary on the Abhidhamma Kosha in the section on meditation, four stages of bliss. It's called Dewa Dewa Chimbo. It's actually found in different. It's found in much higher teachings also. So he does talk about that. Those are related to Shinjang, to agility. Agility means. That was the fourth antidote to the first problem. That does mean some kind of bliss you get from meditating. Mental and physical.
And your body's pliancy.
You feel very light. You feel very supple. But if you really want to know, there's nine levels of level meditation.
What meditation?
Causal meditation. In a division called Shiraki Namaste, which you go up through different levels, and basically what it is it's where each time you get to a higher level, each time you get to a level, the level above you, it's grass is greener concept. The level above you looks a little more subtle, so you lose your desire to stay at this level, and you go up to the higher level of concentration. As you go through those levels. You actually abandon any desire for any kind of sensation. And the way in which you abandon them is, this is not the subject, okay? First you abandon mental unhappiness. Then you abandon physical pain. And then you abandon mental happiness. And then you abandon physical happiness. So what are you left with? There are five feelings, five sensations you can have. What are they? Mental and physical pain, mental happiness and mental unhappiness, physical pain and physical pleasure. And what's the one that you have left? You're capable of having five sensations.
Words.
One is going on, one of them is going on all the time.
Discrimination.
No.
Perception.
No.
Words.
What's that?
Words.
No. What's the fifth sensation you can have? If you're not feeling good and you're not feeling bad, what are you feeling?
Neutral.
Neutral. Okay, so neutral.
Natural.
So as you go up through four levels of high meditation, you give up any desire to have any of those sensations. And each of those sensations becomes a distraction. And at the very highest level, you're left with only neutral feeling. Like you reach some great wisdom and some great height of meditation, and the only thing you want to do is feel neutral.
So this is cutting the root of attachment aversion.
It's not.
What about Bhagavad
Gita? And this is not considered a good method. It's considered a worldly method. And the Hindus do it. You get to a point where you don't even care about feeling good anymore. But then you still got neutral feeling. Neutral feeling is still suffering. Neutral feeling is still samsara.
So that doesn't tie off to step 9 here at all?
You asked.
Come on, I just wondered if it was related.
To get to the very first of those stages, you have to get to here.
After you get to there, then you...
It comes after this. Yeah. This is the highest you can get in the desire realm. Okay. There are higher stages than that. But this is the basic state of mind you need to be in. That state of mind and those states of mind are the same. They are... Shamatha.
All of those are shamatha. Yeah. All those other levels.
Yeah. But that method, which is to try to get more and more bliss and to try to get more and more subtle state of mind, runs out. Yeah. And what you reach is this very, very high state of mind where you're just totally feeling neutral. And then you can't go on beyond that. To go beyond that, you have to do what? See empty mystery. So it's a big danger. You can get up higher than that, go another four levels, and get stuck. Because the capacity to feel is samsara.
And so you mean if you go into a formless realm at that point, reverse in a formless realm?
Yeah, you would be born in a form like this. The capacity to have the sensation of neutral feeling is suffering.
And so in this book, I write that it's equanimity and awareness, what I mean by awareness. Awareness and
that I there could be 10 different contexts for that. You have to show me the context.
Michael. I think we're talking about this.
Excuse me?
I think that we're talking about this.
You're probably talking about, no, it's probably about the, it sounds like the immeasurable, right?
So, Michael, is there ever a level that you attain where the power of concentration or power of focus doesn't degenerate when you stop meditating? You know,
the Buddha. There's a famous quotation in there. The Buddha is in deep meditation. Oop, quiz, you know what I'm saying. Even when he's eating, even when he's walking, even when he's talking, even when he's...
So let's say you get to the next level of this shamatha meditation. If you stop meditating, you lose it?
I think when you come out.
Yeah, like you stop meditating.
Meditation.
You've gotten this level and you stop meditating for a couple of weeks, a couple of months.
This just says that those two problems don't occur during the period of your meditation. You meditate effortlessly after you sit down.
Yeah.
So it implies that when you get up, you lose it.
Yeah, so I'm not saying that you're in meditation all the time. I'm saying, let's say you don't meditate for a month or two and then you go back and meditate. Let's say maybe you drop back down to level 5.
Yeah, sure.
You don't get to a level where you sort of stay there. Your mind stays at that level of focal ability.
Yeah, I that's true. If you're not, it's like a diet. You know, if you go off it for a while. That's what I have to do it in time. Sorry to keep you late.
Sasi Bhagi Jushinne Tavshan Vira Vinci Nyande Yampadi Sange Shindu Mitte Huwagi Jogunanda Shimba
is the end of Class 7.